Hello, this is Brian Scuttle
and Ronnie Haynes,
and we are two of the members of Yahoo's with Microphone.
Minus one.
Yes, Dave Miles could not be with us, and if he was with us, we'd be doing a different commentary. This is for Back to the Future Part 3. We did Part 2 together a while back, and we did Back to the Future with Dave and another one of our friends, and so here basically just round out the trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Hang on to your hats.
It's
gonna be an interesting little ride.
I really wish you hadn't said that, Brian.
Well, just remember you asked me to say it again. Let's just keep that in mind, shall we? This was my favorite of the Back to the Future trilogy. Now I would probably say Part 1 is again my favorite of 3, but I really love this movie. This has always been a favorite of mine.
We're still keeping all three movies. We're still keeping all three of them connected in some way.
Yeah, this is
with the openings.
Yeah, this is obviously the finale of both Part 1 and Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously this is taken from the second one because of what happens in a couple minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Or a minute or so, but anyway.
Still one of my favorite moments in movies. It's coming up right here.
Yeah, this is a really funny moment.
Yeah.
I remember really getting a kick out of this.
Yeah.
DVD version for the original DVD release of this actually has a problem that actually Part 2 shares that I don't believe we discussed on Part 2, and the fact that when they were doing the widescreen transfers to these movies, they messed up the framing.
Uh-huh.
They did, and so basically, they basically framed it as if it were a full frame image, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And
I can see that.
Yeah, you can really tell, actually. The composition is not as. Well, you can definitely tell there's a difference to it.
But there is a version available if you want to. Supposedly, there's a version available if you want to exchange.
Yeah.
Discs.
Yeah, you have to send your discs for Part 2 and 3 to Universal and they'll change them. I believe those are available. I really didn't hear too much about it when they were bringing them out. But I mean, I heard about it, but at the same time, didn't know when they were exactly available. I still need to do that, actually.
Alan Silvestri's love theme for Part 3.
Yes, which I absolutely love.
I'm really fond of it too.
Yeah, this is some of my favorite music of his. I mean, for the trilogy in general, but this one in particular, I really think he did quite a fun score for this.
Now we had some discussion on Part 2 of which of the trilogy, which movie has the most heart, and You said in your opinion that this one was it, and I'm beginning to agree with you.
I do feel that this one does have the most heart. I mean, you know, to a certain degree, I can see where you could say the first one does because of, you know, the relationship Marty, thinking about the actor there, the relationship Marty carves out with his father.
Yeah,
when he's back in 1955,
and good point.
The fact that he brings his mother and father together and all that. And Part 2, you know, you have the relationship between Doc Brown and Marty, which is
it's really beautifully established in that one.
Yeah, and really
successfully,
really makes you feel like, you know, these are two friends who would, you know, do anything for each other, like go back to the future, go back to the past mm-hmm. yet again.
Yeah.
As Marty does in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, thinking about this, it's like, each one of these movies does, in fact, have heart.
Yeah.
Each of these movies do have heart, and they do it in different... They do it by exploring different relationships.
Yeah.
With the first one, it's Marty and his parents, even though they don't realize that he's their son.
Yeah.
And part two, you have the core of the trilogy, which is Doc Brown and Marty, and then the third one, you have Doc Brown and Mary Steenburgen's mm-hmm. character. Mary Steenburgen, whom, you know, we'll discuss later, but mm-hmm. obviously from Parenthood, the great Ron Howard comedy. Christopher Lloyd here from Taxi, which I'm sure we mentioned on the one of the other commentaries,
yeah.
if not both of them.
Uh-huh.
And also a movie that I was reminded of recently when we were trying to think of the name of the movie, The Dream Team.
Oh,
with
yeah.
Michael Keaton.
Yeah. I was actually trying to... I thought of that movie on the way over here, but I couldn't remember the name of it.
Yeah. yeah, we actually had a similar thing. We were trying to think of the comedy with him and Michael Keaton, and they play a bunch of mental patients
yeah.
at work. And we were trying to think of it, and somebody said, is it The Dream Team? And it's like, yes.
Yeah,
it is.
It is. And ironically enough, well, I don't know if this is ironic or if this is a coincidence or whatever you want to call it, but towards the end of Michael J. Fox's run on Spin City, Christopher Lloyd makes an appearance on there, and he plays, not necessarily a mental patient, but he plays somebody who thinks he's God.
Which oh, is, wow.
Yeah,
I didn't
actually,
know that.
It's actually pretty funny.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
Good to know. I never really got into Spin City, which, you know, I guess is... I'm not too...
You wrote me a letter.
I love that
Very Clint
look.
Eastwood right there.
Yeah, and I love that look with his mouth in the
magnifying
glass. And... We missed that bit where he was looking at Howdy Doody. Like, Howdy Doody?
There's the model not built to scale.
From the first movie, and of course,
there's
Doc
the mind
Brown's.
Reading. There's the mind reading machine. Do you know what this means? It means it's a damn thing. All right, sorry. I'm not
yeah.
gonna...
We've already had that discussion.
We've already.
On the counter or two.
Yes.
Oh, one, but anyway.
Very appropriate for his character to end up as a blacksmith.
Yeah. This, you know, it's funny. When I was thinking about this movie before we got into watching it, this movie really did come along at a time when the Western was...
Dead.
Well, dead, but sort of having a second life in theaters.
Yeah.
I mean, this came around the same time, Dances with Wolves.
When did Unforgiven come out?
92. And Unforgiven and Maverick was...
Very true.
Pretty much one of the last ones.
Mm-hmm.
And Wyatt Earp and Tombstone.
Yeah.
I mean, not a whole lot came out, but...
More recently, we had Open Range.
Yeah, the Kevin Costner... movie, and some other ones, The Young Guns, which actually Alan Silvestri scored
mm-hmm.
at least the second one. I don't know if he scored the first one,
mm-hmm.
but he also scored The Quick and the Dead for Sam Raimi, we just found out,
mm-hmm.
looking at Internet Movie Database. And
What famous scientist is Copernicus named after?
Oh, God. I'm sorry. I really do not remember.
Yeah.
I know.
You know it's after some...
Oh, I know he's named after a scientist. I can't remember what exactly he's known for.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to say he's an astronomer or
really?
Something like
yeah.
that, but
that makes sense.
I have a feeling I'm probably wrong on that.
I love how Doc's touched by what he wrote in this letter.
I never thought it could be so beautiful.
Again, none of this could have happened. None of this never should have happened. None of it just could. It didn't have to happen.
Yeah,
but we've already established that.
Yeah,
listen to part two for further insight. I like how it slowly transitions into a Western.
You have the cemetery that sort of looks like it would be in the Old West.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then we have the mine stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. That's what the miner's helmet.
Yeah.
And, you know, slowly but surely, the character of Doc really develops. And it starts out vaguely in part one, and you know a little bit more. You find out a little bit more about him in part two, but he really comes into his own in this movie, his character anyway.
Yeah, and that's one of the things. Well, great movie series, or at least the great movie series with like you know consistent storylines were continuing storylines.
Character development.
You can't really. Yeah. Say that about some movie series like the Indiana Jones trilogy where it's basically a series of adventures, you know, that are not really connected. But, I mean, with this and the Star Wars movies and Lord of the Rings and stuff, I mean, you do get the opportunity to develop characters over time, which is very reminiscent, which is very much what you get to do on a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Doc and magnifying glass. Probably where people learn the word schematic for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing Doc's mouth and magnifying
always
glass saying piece of junk. Yeah, these are some of these jokes where it's like they're not really that funny over time. I mean, you know, they were funny at the time, but you know, they do kind of date the series.
Mm-hmm. Well, Robert Zemeckis admitted that the first one especially was very much an 80s movie.
Yeah.
And you know, very materialistic.
Well, that's also part of the charm of that movie in particular because of the fact, you know, you get a certain amount of nostalgia for it.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry to all our science majors for not knowing
what
Copernicus is known for, but...
Yeah, we're...
I really do feel bad about that.
Yeah, Brian, you're supposed to be the smart one.
I'm also supposed to... Yeah, I mean, I really should have researched that a little bit. It's funny, I've been watching a lot of Simpsons episodes recently on DVD, and they...
Yeah, the creators of that show are...
They had a joke where they did... that Lisa was getting, like, the Encyclopedia Generica, and the next one was Copernicus through, like, something.
Love this. Who the hell is Clara?
Who is Clara?
Marty, please don't stand there!
Okay, we've had that talk. We've established we've had that talk.
Got a future to tell that.
I'm going to make sure I don't get into that pattern either, because I can very easily get into that pattern.
And, that's an effect shot, isn't it?
It kind of does look like it.
Yeah. Which is... How well do we see Marty's character develop throughout the trilogy?
I think he kind of stays the same, but I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, how much do you really need to know about him as the Thing?
Yeah, the character was so well established in the first movie.
Yeah.
And he's more or less kind of like a, well, he's obviously the main character, but...
It's kind of like Indiana Jones, if you think about it. I mean, he's the constant beat in all three of these movies.
Yeah, and...
I love the 50s tires on the DeLorean.
But, there's a similar criticism to... the Harry Potter books, and that, like, nothing necessarily ever happens to the character, in terms of development. It's more or less just the action, happening to them, and the main character is just, like you said, just a constant. Just
I don't know. I mean, I kind of see a bit of a change in some of the Harry Potter ones.
Yeah,
but. Yeah, I will confirm that, Clint Eastwood never did wear clothes like this. and apparently, when they approached Eastwood for permission to use his name in this, apparently he really liked the homage. Because
mm-hmm.
I know, I mean, he's really proud of the work he's done in the Western genre.
Mm-hmm.
Directed a couple of himself. Unforgiven, obviously, The Outlaw, Josie Wales, which unfortunately I still have yet to see. And of course, he was in the Sergio Leone Spaghetti Western trilogy, mm-hmm. which is probably what he's, one of the things he's best known for as an actor,
mm-hmm.
along with Dirty Harry.
Mm-hmm.
Neither is he. There's a reason those Indians are there.
Yeah.
And, well...
We're about to find out why. You mean in the past.
Exactly. And something I just saw on the Internet Movie Database, which I was actually just wondering about and made sure that I was right on this, and they filmed this and... This part, at least, at Monument Valley,
mm-hmm.
which is where John Ford, the great director, directed all of his westerns.
Mm-hmm.
Stagecoach and The Searchers and all of his John Wayne westerns. And actually, John Woo paid homage by shooting a bit of Wind Talkers there, too.
Really wonderful western part. Really wonderful western spin put on the Back to the Future theme right here.
Yeah. I don't know how much of a spin it is on the actual theme, though.
There's a little bit if you listen to it. Unfortunately, not too much of the score for all three movies is available for purchase.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is a shame.
Now, again, talking about putting really brilliant spins on cliches.
Yeah.
There's a really wonderful spin put on the old Indian theme here.
Yeah.
And yes, the DeLorean is not built for this kind of terrain.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some discussion, I think, you can find out some of the extras, there's some discussion when the DeLorean was being designed of whether or not it should be more like a tank.
Yeah, I remember you mentioning car. That.
I mean, because first it started out as kind of like a chamber, didn't it?
I believe, yeah, you're right. We did talk about that in one of the commentaries. I can't remember.
First, it was going to be some sort of chamber, almost like a refrigerator.
Yeah,
and then it was, but then it became obvious that it needed to be a vehicle of some kind.
Yeah, it needed to be mobile, which, you know, makes a whole lot of sense, especially mm-hmm. when you consider the story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Chamber would have been much closer to the H.G. Wells idea of the time machine.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned that this movie hits just about every Western cliche.
Oh, yeah, it really does. But, I mean, you know, at the same time, I mean, that's not a terribly thing. I mean,
no. When it's done right, it's totally entertaining.
Well, it's all about the story. I mean, you have to have a good story to make the cliches work, and mm-hmm. this one really does. Because of the fact that, I mean, let's face it, they've basically taken care of the time travel cliches.
Yeah. Well, we've had everything. We've had, you know, science fiction. We've had westerns. We've had, you know,
yeah,
50s. I almost did 60s for part two, but then
the whole 21st century.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant by science fiction.
Yeah.
And then almost did something in the 60s or the 70s, I think, but then when Crispin Glover didn't end up doing the sequels, that fell through. But then we got what we got in part two, which ended up being pretty brilliant.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's part two.
Yeah, that's part two, which you'll sooner or later be able to listen to. I don't remember Baron any of the westerns I've seen, which, granted, are not that many. Yeah. But still.
It gives us an excuse to listen to Michael J. Fox yell in peril, which is always
yeah.
funny. And that had to hurt.
Yeah.
This is a neat little moment.
Visual gag.
Yeah, this is a neat yeah. moment right here.
Kind of curious as to how they did that.
Well, it was mm-hmm. Vista Glide camera that ILM developed for the part two and three.
Hmm.
Leah Thompson.
Yes.
This is my favorite. This is the best wake-up gag in the entire, I think. We agree on this, don't we?
Yeah, I do believe. Yeah, we do agree with this.
Yeah.
I thought you. I didn't think you liked this.
No, this is my favorite one.
I didn't think this was.
They're all very clever.
That's right. Never mind. Now that I'm thinking about the part two commentary when we were talking about that. Yeah. This is. This is. You are.
Who are you?
Who am I? Who are you?
This is Leah Thompson doing a... Well, you know, Leah Thompson didn't really need to play this part, did she?
Not really. I mean, she's not really in the movie much at all, but...
Well, no, I'm saying she didn't need to play this part because, I mean, it wasn't essential, you know, but obviously they needed her there for the joke, for the gag.
Yeah.
The wake-up gag, and that was primarily, I think, the only reason she was mm-hmm. there. You know, she played...
the mother, or...
Well, what...
Lorraine.
Well, you know, no, I'm saying it was essential that she played... What is Michael J. Fox's...
Lorraine?
No, I'm saying what is his Irish character's name?
Oh, shoot.
There's a very funny outtake on the blooper gag on the gag reel for part three of Michael J. Fox walking through the door and saying, "Maggie, I've got dinner." He's got a big Roger Rabbit stuffed in. Which only works if you know your
Robert Zemeckis.
If you know your Robert Zemeckis. If you know your Robert Zemeckis trivia. It's not filtered, is it?
Nope. Oh God,
what is that character's name?
Shoot.
Is it good? No, we're going to hear it eventually.
I mean, I really
We're going to hear it eventually. You don't need to look it up. It's just Gosh, it's just been a while since we watched this.
It has been. You know.
I'll even give you a hops.
Sheamus.
Sheamus, thank you.
I knew it was something with an
but
S.
I'm saying, like,
I knew it wasn't Shane. Because that would be way too cliche.
But I was going to say that it was essential that we had Lorraine playing the wife of Sheamus.
Yeah.
Leah Thompson playing the wife of Sheamus and Fly, just specifically for that wake-up gag.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, plus, like, she is one of the
staples
of this series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you very easily noticeable effect shot that we just passed.
Still, you know, I mean, the G-Wiz quality is still there, though.
Mm-hmm.
I've always loved the effects in all three movies.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, I've told you before that, like, this period in film when effects really started to flourish.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much my favorite. One of the periods of movies when I'm the most avid about. Just another cute gag here. Just peed on me. But you know the effects. You know. Mid-80s, late 80s, early 90s, they really started to, I don't know, and I think they're the most interesting looking effects.
Yeah, plus, I mean, the really well done ones do hold up very well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you were telling me you were just watching Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Today or recently, and, you know, I definitely think that those hold up pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
But, Of course, I believe Dennis Mirren was part of that one, and I mean, this is ILM right here, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, for some reason, this is my favorite period in movies, when, you know, just.
Yeah.
The effects were, they were still very much, very string and chewing gum, you know, but at the same time, they really started to look beautiful.
Yeah. Now here you have the Western cliches coming like three and four at a time, if not more. But, you know, they're cliches because they work.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the Back to the Future cliches too, but.
I don't remember much of my experience from seeing this in the theater. I do remember laughing when he steps in the poop, the horse poop. I do remember that much.
It's
for a cheap laugh, make your character step in horse poop.
Yep.
There's the courthouse being. I mean, that's just neat.
Going to that poop gag, George Lucas actually. Well, we can talk about this when we do the commentary. We'll probably be doing next, which is for episode one, that George Lucas evidently remembered that when he was doing episode one, because there's a gag similar to this in that movie. But, I don't really have a whole lot of memory from watching this. I mean, I just remember, although I actually do remember, I did actually watch it at the movie theater back in the day where I currently work, or at least the movie theater as it was before the renovations.
Now, I don't recall the names of these actors, but I know that Bob Zemeckis used them specifically because they were such great Western movie character actors. They've been in a lot of Westerns. What will it be, stranger? So you're looking up the names of those actors?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I know you're right. I mean,
one of those actors did a voice for Five Will Goes West, which
Yeah, these actors are Dub Taylor, Harry Carey Jr., and Pat Buchan. Again,
all very
the.
Well, there's a very interesting spin put on, you know, the entire, well, the malt shop that becomes the Cafe 80s that becomes the saloon.
Yeah.
You know, there's a very interesting spin put on this sequence in all three movies.
Yeah. Just looking at Dub Taylor, who was, in fact, in several westerns.
Mm-hmm.
Also was later used by Richard Donner in Maverick.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Nikkei? That's a funny riff on that.
There's a very funny riff on Michael Jackson coming up here.
Oh, God. Harry Carey Jr. was later in Tombstone.
Mm-hmm. Thomas L. Wilson just going to town on this part.
Oh, well, he's got to. I mean, you know, you have to imagine. I mean, he had the time of his life doing this.
Mm-hmm. I mean, again, I mean, I know I mentioned this in both in the other two commentaries, but I mean, he's a great comedic villain.
Yeah.
And, there we have it. Yeah. Yes.
Ugh. Thomas F. Wilson trying to find what else he's been doing.
He hasn't been in much.
He's actually, apparently, going to be in the upcoming SpongeBob SquarePants movie.
Great.
Let's see.
Hold me back.
The That Darn Cat remake.
Oh, that guy jumping up on the horse is great.
Yeah. He's in Action Jackson.
I'm beginning to see why we haven't seen too much of
him. Yeah, he's mostly been doing voice work, it seems like, in TV. Trying to find what else some of these other actors have done.
This is all Michael Jackson and... Or Michael Jackson.
Michael J. Fox.
What the hell?
We actually did just watch the Simpsons episode with Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
So forgive us for thinking about him.
Not to mention the little homage that just occurred there.
Yeah.
Which was pretty clever. But this is all Michael J. Fox doing all this stunt work.
Yeah.
Not, and that was also Thomas Elfison doing all the rope tricks and everything on horseback.
Now the guy up there has to be a stunt double, though, I would imagine.
And if this was ever an entrance, if there was ever an entrance, this is a great entrance.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's
great moment for Doc.
Yeah. There was another Western cliche, the shoe and the rope, which I actually just saw in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Speaking of ugly, Buford Tannen. Ugh.
So, some of the best makeup, I think, in the trilogy is in this one, just because.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't have to go the root of, you know, old age makeup, which I wasn't crazy about in part two.
No, I don't think I was either. I mean, it's some of the stuff that's sort of dated a little bit because of the fact that, here's a plot point.
Yeah.
Thanks for Marty for realizing that.
Yeah.
He does have a point.
Yeah.
No.
This is, I mean, when you think about all the physical work, the, you know, all the physicality that Michael J. Fox went through in all three movies, you know, this
yeah.
is right around the time that supposedly his muscular dystrophy mm-hmm. really started to become obvious.
Wonder how much of this, I mean, is really, you know, built, and how much of it is just, you know, the cliched.
I think this entire
just set, you know, where, you know, if you went behind all this stuff, it would be,
oh yeah,
you know, just a stand up.
No, I wish I'd paid him. It's all great.
Yeah.
Christopher Lloyd stuff. But this is very much, you know, very reflective.
I love this invention. It's such a huge invention. Its sole purpose, and yeah, its sole purpose is just to make an ice cube.
Mm-hmm.
Not even a lot of ice cubes. One
ice cube. But the I love what Christopher Lloyd says here, as or I guess I should say, I love what Doc says there. How ridiculous the idea of Doc Brown falling in love is, because it's very reflective of what the filmmakers were saying at first, of, you know, just
yeah.
the audacity of the idea of Doc Brown falling in love.
Mm-hmm.
These two have a really great rapport with each other.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I guess we know who Claire is now. he's like
a lot of the thing is, it's like, you know, a lot of his comedy comes from physical acting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it comes from, you know, the way his face looks, the way he does, you know, his body movements and what have mm-hmm. you.
Well, again, you know, Christopher Lloyd's a theater trained actor.
Yeah.
Michael J. Fox is definitely one of the most humble movie stars out there.
Yeah.
At least he comes across really that way. And that's part of his appeal.
Mm-hmm. Really is too bad that he hasn't been able to do, you know, more.
Well, he's about to make a guest appearance on Scrubs, actually.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He's about to do a couple of episodes of that.
I did see an ad for it.
So...
How long did it take him to make that?
Yep. Oh, yeah, sure, no problem. No problem.
Just a little throwaway info there.
A neat camera angle here.
Yeah. Cinematographer is Dean Cundey, who did Jurassic Park. I know.
And I know that this is acknowledged in the commentary that Doc would be smart enough to know that this would never work.
Yeah.
But it's just a neat image.
It's the cliche. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, sort of the stagecoach.
Yeah, well, they did it specifically for, you know, just to get a really cool shot of
yeah.
the DeLorean being pulled by
horses.
Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, otherwise Doc would know that this wouldn't work either.
Yeah.
But you gotta have the cliche of, like, you know, the bartender. Yeah, I guess this movie could be criticized for making Doc seem less intelligent sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've got some plot holes and you've got some, you know, character problems as far as character and what have you. But, you know, it's fun anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those movies where it's like you sort of just look over the cliches and just...
Well, I remember one of the things that was acknowledged by the critics when this movie came out. Not necessarily a piece of criticism, but, you know, just a acknowledgement of the fact that there's almost a role reversal here with Marty and Doc.
Yeah.
The Doc becomes the more, you know...
Which I think we talked about, touched on a bit in part two.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you really do see it.
Mm-hmm. All the stuff of the train, I believe completely. I totally believe.
Oh yeah, I would buy that.
I mean, 100%.
And I buy that they could figure it out. The clock that's going to go above the clock tower being brought off the train back there.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I never noticed that.
I just noticed that too. So. Yeah, we haven't watched this movie in a while. Sort of an impromptu commentary, but...
Yeah. That means nothing about, you know, the way we really feel about this movie. It really is one of our favorites.
Yeah, really. More Alan Silvestri dramatic suspense music.
You know it's interesting. This is actually all throughout Forrest Gump too. Is you know, just the kind of acknowledging the how ridiculous some of this is.
Yeah.
You know, just like the what am I trying to think of? Just, you know, or, you know, just pointing out certain things like, you know, that's the $80 or something like that. The kind of tongue in cheek kind of.
Yeah.
Plot movement, the winking back of the camera sort of thing. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I know it's not intentionally intended to be, winking back at the camera, but, I mean, you know, if you look at this from a critical standpoint, you can see where could say that.
Or, you know, Doc mentioning, you know, I thought this was called Clayton Ravine, but just like that sort of. It's actually,
and it's one of those. Well, that's one of those things where it's like you kind of wonder, and you really would only think about if you remembered what her last name was when they mentioned it. And
well, I think it's more winking back at the camera in the sense that, you know, there's gonna be a payoff, you know. Like, you can almost tell...
I've never really thought of it.
You can almost tell that there's going to be a payoff to that when Doc says, you know, funny, I thought this was called Clayton Ravine, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
Just the way he delivers the line.
Yeah.
You know, you can almost tell. I mean, in my opinion anyway, you can almost tell that there's going to be some sort of payoff.
I don't know. I mean, I never really thought of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
That was we just actually talked over... Pretty fun sequence. Pretty exciting sequence.
Yeah. Mary Steenburgen.
Yes. Who was... Like what? I mentioned, was in Parenthood, the great Ron Howard movie.
Wife to Ted Danson, two people we don't see enough of in film.
No, we really don't. No, you really don't see enough of her.
Or the new
movies. And it's... Disappointing, actually. Oh, she was just an elf. I forget about that.
Right, right.
Thinking about what else, trying to find what else she's been in. She was in Nixon, the Oliver Stone movie. She was in Philadelphia. And what's he in? Gilbert Grape. Yeah, you smitten.
And the fact that Christopher Lloyd, especially, I mean, both Christopher Lloyd and Mary Sheen version do this, but Christopher Lloyd plays this so honestly.
Oh, yeah. He really, and it really is a turn from the sort of kind of over-the-top comedy he's been playing the past 2.5 movies.
Mm-hmm.
So...